Sports Beat Extra with Odrin Johnson on Beat.
Some big news for hurling fans, especially Kilkenny hurling fans this week. The King is back. Kilkenny GAA has confirmed the appointment of Henry Shefflin as the new manager of the senior hurling team. The Ballyhale Shamrocks clubman won 10 All-Irelands with the Cats during his playing days, managed the Galway senior hurlers and was most recently in charge of their under-20s side. Shefflin also managed the Shamrocks to back-to-back All-Ireland club titles. Joining me now to discuss the comeback of the King and last weekend's explosive hurling semi-finals is Off the Ball sports editor and host of the Hurling Pod, Will O'Callaghan. You're very welcome back to Sportsbeat Extra, Will.
Thanks, Aoife.
Is it fair to say Kilkenny are happy to have Henry Shefflin back in the fold for the senior hurlers?
I think so. I think this almost felt inevitable that Henry Shefflin was in line for succession. At whatever point Derek Ling was going to step away from the senior team, once he had come back in and become part of the system again, it's fairly well documented that Brian Cody wasn't happy when Henry Shefflin made the decision to not be part of his backroom team and go pursue the senior hurling job in Galway. I think Henry has been quite open that he felt that he needed to go and get experience elsewhere, but ultimately the dream job for him at the end of all this when it came to management would become the Kilkenny senior hurling manager at some point. I think at the point that he decided to leave Kilkenny to go west of the Shannon, it was unclear how long Brian Cody was going to stay in charge. Obviously, Derek Ling then moved from, you know, Brian Cody's inner circle to become the manager over the last few years. And Henry Shefflin, as you said in your intro, kind of went a slightly different direction, left Galway eventually, decided to go back to his home club for a little spell, and then gets involved with the Kilkenny under-20s in the season just gone by. What I thought was incredibly clear was that when Henry Shefflin didn't appear on punditry this summer, Aoife, he did some punditry earlier in the year, and I did wonder at one point when he was reasonably critical of some of the decision-making by Derek Ling, where I think to Henry's credit, he was actually just being remarkably honest on the RTE coverage. It wasn't a case of trying to undermine the senior manager, but there were some of us who watched that early this season during the league and kind of thought, okay, this is a slightly strange situation where you've got Henry Shefflin, who in theory is working for Kilkenny and is the Kilkenny under 20 manager, who should be entirely in step with what's happening with the seniors. And he's criticizing the setup of the senior team who are managed by his former teammate, Derek Ling. I think he was probably clever enough to step away from that punditry this summer, so they wouldn't appear that there was any type of conflict of interest, or maybe something he'd say on the TV might become an issue when the Kilkenny job came up this summer. Because it was incredibly clear once Kilkenny had lost that game against Dublin in the Leinster round robin that Derek Ling was going to leave. I think by his interview, it was really, really obvious that he would be gone within a few weeks. And to his credit as well, he decided to step down reasonably quickly, which allowed Kilkenny County Board to seek nominations from the clubs, which they did, and they had a fairly wide range of candidates. But when you looked at the names, it felt like there was probably two people that stood out on the list. Brian Dowling, because of what he's done in Kildare, and Henry Shefflin, naturally, is the most decorated player in Kilkenny's history. And I think the attraction was always going to be there to appoint Henry Shefflin. And Pat Gilroy comes in. He's obviously part of the process. I believe it was incredibly thorough, the way that Kilkenny went through things, and they looked at all of the candidates. But Henry did seem like the outstanding candidate from the off. I think one of the things, Aoife, from listening to some of the former Kilkenny players, is Natagi Fogarty, Richie Hogan, also Paul Murphy during the week, they were saying the one thing is that Henry is so respected within the county and among the players, and he will have been a massive hero for young players who are coming through now, that people will be really attracted to go and play for them. I'm not saying this is a guarantee that the boys who are in Australia right now are going to turn around and say, I'm coming back because Henry Shefflin is there. I don't think that's the case, but I think everyone will want to get involved. And perhaps even more crucially, it looks like Henry Shefflin is putting together a bit of an Avengers assemble of a backroom team at this stage. So his former teammate David Herity is going to be coming across from Tipperary. My understanding is that his title is going to be head hurling coach for the coming season. So while Henry Shefflin will be the manager, I think David Herity will be doing a lot of the coaching on the pitch. And David Herity obviously went to Tipperary, was a key part of them winning the All-Ireland title in 2025. And that very unusual occasion where he was coaching against his own county in that All-Ireland semi-final. But Herity's going to come back in. It's believed that Shefflin has been in conversation with some other very high-profile former Kilkenny players who will probably be part of his management team for next season as well. I do appreciate Kilkenny County Board didn't confirm any of those details in the press release, which came out during the middle of the week. But just my understanding of what we've heard so far is that it looks like Henry Shefflin's going to have some really big hitters on his management team. So nobody could really argue that Kilkenny haven't responded to the fact that they were knocked out of the championship earlier this year. They've kind of gone all in here, really.
And do you think the timing played a role at all when this statement was released? Obviously, just off the back of those All-Ireland semi-finals, and maybe Kilkenny fans thinking to themselves, God, we should have been one of the teams in there. I just think the timing is quite interesting.
It maybe soothes it a little bit for Kilkenny fans who were probably watching on TV at the weekend and thinking, I really wish that our team had been there, for sure. Obviously, part of the process was that they were having, I believe, an online ratification with the meeting that they had in the week just gone by. It all moved along very quickly, actually, because it was about 3 weeks ago when nominations closed from the clubs. Then we heard the involvement of Pat Gilroy, who was helping the board essentially to assess those candidates who have been put forward by the clubs for potentially appointment. And then the ratification happened really quickly afterwards. It all moved quite quickly. I would think, based on the timing as well of Kildare's reappointment of Brian Dowling afterwards, like pretty much within 24 hours of that news, that I would think that the two candidates that were really at it right at the very end were probably Dowling and Shefflin, and it probably came between the two of them. I think also Kildare, it's interesting that they didn't put Brian Dowling into a situation where he had to resign or leave as Kildare manager because he was pursuing the opportunity to manage his own county. I think they were very, very understanding of that. And I think he has earned that as well because of what he's achieved in Kildare over the last couple of seasons, you know, going from Christy Ring up to the Leinster Senior Championship this year. They felt that that patience was probably afforded and they allowed that to happen. So in a way, it kind of becomes a happy conclusion, because the one thing I was a little bit worried about the situation would be that Brian Dowling would have to leave Kildare, doesn't get the Kilkenny job, and then Kildare miss out, but he also misses out on getting a job where I think he was a really, really strong candidate as well. If Kilkenny had decided to go a different way and it wasn't to appoint Henry and maybe put a team around Henry, there is definitely an argument, and I'm sure there's some who feel probably across the county, that Brian Dowling, given what he's achieved with much more meagre resources in Kildare, and notwithstanding as well what he's achieved with St. Kieran's College and with the Kilkenny Camogie team, that they could have went for a different coaching option by bringing Brian Dowling in. And I'm sure they were probably very much considering that, but it's difficult, as you said at the outset, to go up against the king.
Absolutely. And as you mentioned there, I'd be the same age as a lot of those Kilkenny hurlers, say, that would have watched and idolised Henry all during their childhood up until their early teens. And to have him as your manager, I can't even begin to imagine what that will mean to the players. And I would imagine will give them a huge lift as well.
I think it will. I mean, like, I was talking to Paul Murphy about this earlier this week, and he was saying it's not quite a starstruck moment, but he had gone for a green Cooper helmet because Henry Shefflin wore a green Cooper helmet.
Absolutely.
That is the influence that Henry Shefflin had on that generation. And he's been through and retired and was back coaching with the Kilkenny underage team. So you can imagine how excited the lads will be, as you say, who are of a certain vintage that would have, you know, watched Henry Shefflin dominate games. And even towards the end of Henry Shefflin's career, which I always think is interesting, he talked to his former teammates that, you know, Henry may not have been the free scoring player, maybe moving quite as freely as he was before, but he could do something quite similar to Garrod Hegarty at the weekend, whereby he would win the important ball, or he would get the score which is required to get Kilkenny back into a game. And just, he was able to use his leadership to still get those last few bits out of him and wins his 10 Celtic crosses, which nobody else has ever achieved in the sport of hurling. So I think they will be very, very much inspired to go in and play for him. And I think Galway, his time there is very, very difficult to assess, because again, it felt like Galway were in a period where they were trying to bring through young players at that stage. Some of them have now fired at this stage under Micheál Donoghue, and Micheál has brought in an even younger cohort who were involved in the recent under-20 teams. It's not that I'm giving Henry Shefflin a pass here, but I think it can be very difficult when you're going into another county where maybe you don't have an intimate knowledge, which he obviously will have in Kilkenny, of what's happening on the ground. Where I think when Micheál Donoghue came in, tried out a remarkable amount of players last season and has now refined down their panel this year to get to an All-Ireland final. I wouldn't necessarily, because I see some people were arguing, oh, well, look, you know, Galway a couple of years later in an All-Ireland final compared to where they were with Henry. It's a little bit of a different group of players that are there currently. So I wouldn't be too harsh on that in terms of Henry Shefflin's achievements or maybe lack of achievement in Galway, because again, they could have won a Leinster final if it wasn't for a really late Killian Buckley goal as well. So it is, again, ifs and buts and maybes, but it could have been a very different story if that goal didn't go in.
Now, could we talk about the semi-finals last weekend, and first of all about that Galway win over Cork? Obviously a massive shock for Cork, who no doubt thought they were an absolute shoe-in for the All-Ireland final this year. And then The second half, they just completely lost it. What do you think really happened?
I think probably what happened was we've seen a trend of this, obviously, over a few games, most notably, obviously, the All-Ireland final of last year, where they only score a couple of points in that game against Tipperary in the entire All-Ireland final. This time around, they scored a little bit more, but I was kind of charting it during the game. So between the second half of the Munster hurling final this year, the All-Ireland semi-final of this season, and last year's All-Ireland final, Cork scored a very paltry 1 goal and 13 points across the 3 second halves of those 3 games. Darren McCarthy scored 1-13 in the All-Ireland final for Tipperary on his own. So he would have drawn against those 3 second halves for Cork. So to me, that is a trend and that is a pattern. And I just wonder when it came to Cork as well, when it started to slip in that third quarter, where Galway win it by 10-1, psychologically, quite aside from the tactics, and the tactics did go to pot a little bit too, I just wonder if psychologically you just look up at the scoreboard, you look at what's happening, and some of those Cork players are thinking, this is happening again. I can't believe it's happening again.
In Croke Park, of all places as well, given what happened, yeah, obviously, with the All-Ireland last year.
Like, I had kind of thought earlier this season that maybe Cork had not quite put that to bed, because I think you have to win an All-Ireland final to actually really be able to banish those demons. But I felt at different times that Cork were working towards looking like a different team to last year. What's very clear now is that it wasn't Pat Ryan and his management team last year. It wasn't the case of this supposed row that happened at halftime that was being speculated about afterwards. It seemed to start from some Cork supporters who were claiming there was that argument about Owen Downey not being taken off the field and so on. This is repeated. It was not down to an argument at the weekend. It was not down to any sense of complacency, I don't think, in that game against Galway, because the first half was very competitive and Cork were, you know, basically pushed back towards half time. So there was no reason that they wouldn't have been entirely sharp coming into the second half. But Galway outbattled them and Galway beat them on their puck out, and Cork were put under immense pressure. And then at the time when leadership was probably required in the second half of that game, it was found very much wanting. One that I really couldn't understand was that Cork stopped shooting from range. It seemed they had to be in the perfect position before they would shoot. They tried to work for goals way too early on as well. The scoreboard wasn't ticking over. And it almost felt like every time that Galway put a point between the posts, they got a kind of an emotional lift by the fact that they were keeping the scoreboard going and were pulling away from Cork at that point. And Cork just had no response when it was required. It's going to be a soul-searching winter period, I would say, for Cork, because with the remarkable amount of talent that they have, we judge them very harshly after games like this. But just, it's unacceptable. I don't think the great Cork teams of old, a John Gardner type, Brian Corcoran, The Rock, Sean O'Gahalpin, those type of players
wouldn't give up like that.
A run of 10 points to 1 on them. No, just wouldn't happen.
And then that Limerick-Clare game, a completely different kind of game. I caught a bit of it. I was on the ferry from Inishere to Doolin, and there were a lot of very excited Clare fans, screams, grown men, grown women screaming on the ferry. It was thrilling to listen to. Obviously, didn't end up working out in Clare's favour, but Clare really put in a battle.
They did, and I think I wouldn't be as harsh in their second half where they only scored 1-3. Obviously, Cork fans may well be listening to you right now and going, well, how could we be having a goal at Cork second half and not Clare?
It was a different game. It was way more physical, really, was it?
It was. It was a little bit different. And, you know, Clare were incredible. Probably their best performance since they won the All-Ireland in 24, the first half against Limerick. Limerick felt entirely stifled, and it looked like Limerick weren't going to have the answers. And some of their key players were just entirely curtailed during the game. I know Aaron Gillan got the hook in the Munster final as well, but I just haven't seen him looked as off as he did during that game before John Kiely and Paul Kinnaird decided to substitute him in the second half. Keane Lynch obviously wasn't 100% fit. He only came on for the last kind of 15, 16 minutes of the game. He makes a very important catch in the lead up to the Aidan O'Connor goal. But it was some of the younger players, Aidan O'Connor, Adam English, Cathal O'Neill, who really made a huge difference. I know Dermot Burns popped over some long-range scores that definitely gave energy to Limerick during the game. But it was some of their younger players that actually proved the difference between the teams at the weekend. The killer for Clare, when they look back at the defense, is just that they didn't manage to profit from the goal. Like, once that penalty goes into the net, it's 56, I think, on the clock at the time. Clare don't score again for the rest of the game. I don't know if I can relitigate the black card again for about a 15th time this weekend, or the lack of a black card. But the reality is that Clare after that didn't score. And any Clare supporters I was talking to coming out of Croke Park, and I bumped into some of them going to work on Monday as well, their feeling was, as disappointed as they were by certain elements of the game, they were also very much recognising that they let that game slip.
And then All-Ireland final, it'll be Galway versus Limerick. We didn't think we'd be saying that maybe a few weeks ago. But I think similar to Tipperary last year, and I would say the same about Galway, I would not be writing Galway off in an All-Ireland final. I know Limerick obviously will be the favourites. And as you mentioned there, they're a very different team this year. They have those younger players supporting, you know, some of their All-Star and All-Ireland winning players. But what do you think heading into the All-Ireland final, do you think that it will be quite a tight match or a tight game between Galway and Limerick?
It's a really weird kind of reverse mirror of 2018, whereby Galway were the established team and were actually the defending All-Ireland champions going into that final in 18, and Limerick were very much the coming team, and there were a lot of young players that had come through from their under 21 team from the 2 years previously. So Galway obviously have that this year, and we saw how well Rabbit played at the weekend. The likes of Conor Neary, Aaron Nyland have been really important during the season. I'm not sure if Rory Burke is going to be fit for the final. I think Galway would be hoping that he will be. But they've been injected by this youth in a similar way to Limerick were in 2018. Because it's been 8 seasons, and Galway do have some players like the Mannions and like Cathy Burke, who were around when they won the All-Ireland in 2017. But the reality is that the vast majority of them, this is a reasonably new occasion for them going into an All-Ireland final. So it feels a little bit like Limerick. While Limerick are obviously very much the established team, you know, some of those players have been around basically since the success of 18 and then the 4 in a row. And you just kind of wonder whether maybe Galway's youth can give them that opportunity to go out, not with abandon in the final, because it's never really abandoned, but that they could go out there and maybe not be beaten psychologically before the ball is thrown in, which has been the case sometimes when Limerick have gone to All-Ireland finals, particularly at their pomp. I don't think that Limerick are as strong a team as they were between, say, 2020 and 2023, when realistically they felt like they were a long way ahead of the pack. And Galway, the other thing going into the final for them, Aoife, is that they match up very well physically with this Limerick team as well. Like, Galway have got size, they've got power, and they've got pace at the moment. So if they decide to go toe-to-toe against Limerick, they're one of the few teams who can do that. I would still make Limerick, I think, like, justifiable favourites going into it, but I wouldn't be one bit surprised if Galway turned them over. I always thought there was going to be a surprise at the weekend just gone by. I wasn't sure which game it was going to be in. Turns out it was Galway overturning Cork.
Will O'Callaghan, I can't wait to hear the All-Ireland preview of the Hurling Pod. That is Will O'Callaghan from Off the Ball, and you can catch Will on Off the Ball and also listen to the Hurling Pod on the Go Loud app.
Sports Beat Extra with Odrin Johnson. On Beat.